Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barca Talk. I am your host, Brian Henderson, and joining me from Madrid is your co-host, Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. How are you doing this weekend?
I'm doing a little groggy. It's Sunday morning for me, and I just performed in a concert last night because, you know, most of my time I'm a musician. So I was singing in this concert last night. It went pretty well. We did some pretty freaky music, and it went all right. And then we're also entertaining some guests here at the house, friends of Megan's. So, you know, we got a lot of fun, exciting things going on here. It's getting properly cold in Buffalo. We're hitting, you know, the 20 degrees Fahrenheit temperatures. So we're starting to wear the various layers of warm clothing. We got the long underwear. We got the big coats. I got the hats. So winter has arrived in Buffalo. We even had a little bit of snow the other day. So there's this canopy of just cloud cover that descends on Buffalo from about this time in November until March. So there's a good chance that I will not see the sun until March, unless I go to California for Christmas, which I should do. How's it going over there in Madrid?
So we're starting to get cold weather here, not as cold as yours, but definitely need our long jackets and comforters at night for sure, and maybe a heater here, you know. But we have the sun, so that's a really a nice thing here. So really quick, before, how would you describe your voice? Would you describe your singing voice as like a mixture of Jesus and Fergie?
I would not. I'm a pretty low bass voice, so like I like to get down there and sing low notes. And this is all mostly like kind of classical or classical type stuff, but it's all contemporary. So I mean, sometimes we sang a piece last night where I had to just like scream, not like Pantera scream, but just like yelling loudly, like singing very, very loudly. And then in that same piece, I also had to make these creaky sounds like that kind of thing. But like generally when I'm singing, I'm a bass. I like to be down low. I hold it down, and I generally have a pretty smooth voice. So I did one time sing at an Easter service in this like kind of it was just a piece of music, but there was a story involved. It was one of the passions, I think, actually, and I was the voice of Jesus. And mostly Jesus is voiced by a tenor singer, which is a higher voice, and I sang it as a bass, and I think I convinced everyone in the church that day that Jesus should be heard as a bass, but, you know, whatever.
That was just my...
Honestly, don't get me talking about music, because the fact is I try to keep my Barca Talk life and my other musical life kind of separate, because if you get me started talking about music, then I'll just alienate you, and I'll talk about all kinds of like insider stuff, you know, because like I'm getting a PhD in music. I have a master's degree in music. I have a lot of training. I've been doing music pretty much my whole life. I've been following Barca for like 7 years, right? So it's a very different situation. And if you get me started on music, man, it could just spin way, way out.
So we don't want to mix worlds. Is that what you're telling me? We don't want to mix Brian's music with Brian's love for Barca. We want to keep them separated.
Right. Mostly because I assume that there's very, very little crossover between the sort of area of music that I operate in, which is it's very academic. It's like very, very niche kind of contemporary classical music. Like, I doubt anyone who listens to this show has also gone to my website, brianhenderson.net, and listened to the music that I write, because there's just very little crossover. At the same time, none of my friends and colleagues in the music world, except for one or two, can even talk to me about football. I have one friend who's a musicologist, and he studies mostly punk music. But he's a really cool guy. He's a Man City fan. I had him on the show last season as a guest. His name's Connor. And he and I can talk about football. But everyone else, they have no idea what I'm talking about. They have no interest. And I just sort of assume that the opposite is also true. You know, anyone who's listening to this show is probably a Barca fan and probably not into contemporary classical, you know, music like last night at the concert that we gave, there were about 25 people there in this gigantic church, and that's considered really good turnout.
All right, well, you know, that's where we're going down the music alley, so let's turn around and get back to Barca. We have some
good
thanks. We have some exciting news. So Brian, tell the fellow Kool-Aids what our upcoming exciting news is for Barca Talk.
Big news for Barca Talk. We have some good news coming down the pike. We will be available on Spotify soon. We've actually we've set everything up. We've already been accepted into Spotify's podcast listing network, or however you want to think about it. They have accepted us. Not just anybody can get on Spotify, but we have been accepted. We've set up all the technological things on our end to distribute the show on Spotify. It hasn't shown up yet. I search for it maybe 3 or 4 times a day, and it's just going to be on the app. So if you're using Spotify on your desktop or whatever, it's not going to show up there. But if you're using any Spotify app, either iPhone or Android, eventually Barca Talk will appear there. So if you're also using Spotify for podcasts in addition to whatever you're using to hear this right now, you should be able to find us on Spotify shortly, and we will keep you updated as to, you know, if that shows up or not. I mean, it will eventually, but we'll let you know when it actually appears.
Yeah, they kind of gave us like the cable company response, right? They're just like, be at home between noon and 9 p.m. on a Tuesday, right? So we don't know. So yeah, we've been accepted. I've been checking frantically 5 or 6 times a day because I love Spotify, and so I'm just super excited that we're on Spotify as a podcast option. So I think that'll just, you know, I know that some listeners were asking for it because a lot of listeners can listen to Spotify at different places. And the great thing about Spotify, it doesn't lose your place in the podcast, just like any other app. So that's another great feature that Spotify has. I'm a huge Spotify fan. I have a bunch of playlists, and I just love the ability to listen to it on desktop and on the app. So I think that's great news for us, just to have another option for our listeners to listen to Barca Talk.
Yeah, and hopefully find new listeners. I mean, maybe there are people who are just really into Spotify. They don't want to get into other, you know, podcast apps, particularly, I would think, Android users, because there's this native podcast app in iPhone, right? So if you use an iPhone, it's kind of built in that you could listen to podcasts if you want. But like Android users have to actually get a podcatcher app, you know, like post facto. See, there's my education coming through, right? Throwing a little Latin at you. But yeah, so like we are hoping a lot that just regular old Spotify users will happen upon the show, and we can continue to build the audience and grow the community around Barca Talk. So we're very excited about it. But anyway, moving on, let's get into the show proper, Barca Talk, as it were. You know, we didn't have any games to review this past week. There was an international break. So whenever we're on an international break, what we like to do is have some special feature story. And this week, Gabriel had the idea to sort of relive and revisit the 91-92 dream team for Barcelona and all of the circumstances surrounding that and how revolutionary they were. So that's going to be our main feature story today, so that even though there aren't games that we can review that just happened, we want to give you something special to experience. Now, of course, we'll also be responding to a few listener comments and questions. And we have a couple of small news and notes from the first team. And of course, we will check in with Barca B and the women's side. And then, of course, we'll look ahead to the matches that are coming up for the first team. So first up on our agenda today, we want to respond to a couple listener comments and questions. This first one came from Pranit on Twitter. He says, "Hey guys, question for the podcast this week. Rumors are that Piqué is more inclined to sign with Man U than City. However, there are also rumors that the board is looking to renew his contract. With his poor play, should we keep him and bring him off the bench, allowing him to mentor another promising center back from outside?" And he suggests, in parentheses, Jonathan Tah, or anyone from Barca B, or should we let him go? I love Piqué and the spirit attitude he brings to the club and would hate to see him leave, but what are your thoughts?
So, Brian, do you think, I mean, So I saw this question, and I don't think the board should release him. Obviously, I think they should renew him, because having a center back of PK's quality is really, really hard to find a replacement. And when I read this comment, in my mind, I was like, okay, is he really having a poor season? Like, I don't think he's having such a poor season. Maybe he's had a couple gaffes here and there, but I mean, I don't think he's really like on a super decline or anything, like where he's had games in consecutive where you're like, wow, PK looks super slow, or PK can't make the right pass. I mean, I haven't had that feeling. And to give up on a center back of PK stature, I think would be a terrible move, because it's so hard to get back, to recoup back. I mean, do you think that, I mean, what is, do you think that PK is having such a bad season? I don't think he's having that bad of a season.
No, I don't think he's having a bad season at all. I think there's a possibility that maybe he's actually being a little bit outshined by Umtiti, because Umtiti has been performing so incredibly well and putting out so many fires. And I mean, he's a different kind of center back from PK. PK is a little bit more positional and cerebral, whereas Umtiti is more physical. So I'm wondering if, you know, maybe just having Umtiti on there, which is great. We love Umtiti. We love Monsieur Umtiti. We'll get into that in a second. But I think it's possible that if you're looking at the two of them playing together, you might think that PK is not having a great season. But yeah, I haven't seen him make any serious mistakes. I don't think he's lost too many steps. You know, he's 30 years old, but you know, at this point in time, the fitness levels for a lot of these players, I mean, every individual player is sort of on some level responsible for their own longevity and fitness. But I feel like the medical staff and the physical therapy and the physical trainers at Barca, they're operating at a really high level of sort of scientific understanding of maintaining longevity. And so even though he's 30, you might think that's old, but I think he easily has a few more years of really solid play in him. And I don't think he's had a bad season at all. And as far as these rumors are concerned, I mean, I don't know. He can do whatever he wants to do. I think that the board should do everything they can to hold on to him, not only to play, but also to mentor an upcoming center back. Like, I was just checking in this morning on Marlon Santos. Remember him? We sent him out on loan to Nice. I don't really know how he's doing. I haven't checked in with his progress, if he's getting playing time with Nice or if he's going to come back to Barca. But I felt like I really enjoyed some of the performances that he gave. Also, you know, we've talked in the past about how we'd like to see Bartra come back to Barcelona. That would be great. But no, I don't think PK is having a bad season by any stretch. And I don't see why we should let him go at all.
I think you brought up a good point with the, you know, we're seeing Monsieur Umtiti playing so well. And so the contrast between PK and him, you know, it's more significant. But also, I think that PK, you know, he brings something back there. Like you said, he's a cerebral player. He positions himself well. Plus, he's super confident with the ball passing from the back, which is a huge thing for us. Again, for me, finding a center back is super difficult to find in the free market, especially one in their prime. It's going to be super expensive. So for me, like, just renew him for 3 to 4 years and go from there. And then, you know, we can upgrade the attack. That's an easier thing to do through the transfer market as opposed to finding another center back. So that's, you know, it's a great question. But I think the Man City are just rumors, especially with this week. You know, newspapers are looking just for more traction and things to talk about because it's so slow with no league games in the world.
Yeah, and most of the international games are all friendlies. There are very few competitive ones, and certainly not any competitive games of note happening in the international matches. So there's not a whole lot of interest there. The club schedule is, you know, is non-existent. So yeah, these papers and various media outlets, they have to create content. That's their entire job, is to create content. Doesn't matter what whether it's good or useful or not. So okay, actually, let me take a break from this, Gabriel, and let's talk about Monsieur Umtiti for a moment. So you ran a Twitter poll this week, and how did that go?
Yeah, so we had a Twitter poll last week, and we were trying to figure out the official nickname for Mr. Samuel Umtiti, and we came officially with the official nickname with Monsieur Umtiti. The other runners-up names were really good. We should have added this other one, which was super good. I forget, someone on Twitter added Puyol with cheese. I thought that was really great. That was a really good one. But we were talking about the mailman we had up there, and then we also had Puyol 2.0. I'm perfectly fine with Monsieur MTT, just with our little French accent. But also, it's also really cool because I like, you know, Mr. MTT. It just sounds more official and just more, I don't know, like more solid of a nickname. And it just represents of who he is as a player as well, I think. So I think it's a really fitting nickname. And I want to thank all the people who voted. I thought that was great because we want to always, you know, have voting in different social media. Unfortunately, on Facebook, they don't really have a good poll system unless you have a different type of group. So we ran it on Twitter and we had a good turnout. So officially, BarçaTalk.net nickname for Mr. Samuel Umtiti is Monsieur Umtiti.
Yeah, and now there was one comment on Facebook, another name that I liked, just The Wall, but I'm very happy to call him Monsieur Umtiti because, you know, then I get to work on my French accent.
I mean, who doesn't, right? Everyone wants to work on their French accent, so that's the goal, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Everybody. But our next comment came from Kareem, and he just got in touch with us through the website, BarçaTalk.net. He says, "Hi, guys. I really love your show, and it's the first thing I do on my Montreal cold Monday." Yeah, if it's cold here in Buffalo, I can't imagine how cold it is in Montreal at this point. Anyway, he says, "My question is, what are the odds to see Thiago Alcantara back in Barca? Especially, he might be the best solution to our midfield. I think we really need him. Thank you, guys." So do you think we really need Thiago in the midfield at this point?
I think it was one of the board's biggest mistakes to let him go. I think they weren't patient enough. They didn't see maybe the deterioration of Xavi and Iniesta so far, you know, because imagine if we had Thiago right now, then our midfield would just be that much stronger. We had him on a good contract at the time because he was from, you know, we've had him in the youth system for so long. So we didn't have to pay so much money for him. But I think the odds are super, super, super low that he'll ever come back just because he's a star player for Bayern. He's having a good career there. And for us to pay for him, we would have to pay out the nose to get him back. And so, you know, I think that was one of their biggest mistakes because I really liked Thiago. He was, he had flair. He was really good. You know, he just needed more playing time and just to be a little bit more disciplined, which I think he would have arrived to that point because now we see how he is in Bayern. But I don't think they're going to bring him back. And, you know, he was a really great player, or not was, but is a great player. And I wish that the Barca board would have hung on to him a little bit longer. So, unfortunately, I think for Kareem and other people who are Thiago fans, I don't see him coming back into Barca anytime soon.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I absolutely agree that letting him go was one of the biggest mistakes that board has made. Because when they let him go, he was still pretty young. He wasn't, I guess you would say, fully formed as a player yet. But then you just saw within one or two seasons at Bayern with Pep Guardiola, how he just lit up. He came on fire, and now he's indispensable to Bayern. He's doing a great job over there. And I think because of that, he's found that he can, you know, have a successful career. And even though he came up through the through La Masia, the B squad and all that, I don't think that he has too much sentimentality about Barca. So I think that would be the only thing, aside from a whole lot of money, that would ever bring him back. And it seems like he's perfectly happy where he is. You know, eventually in any player's career, you might want to find some new challenges. But that's the thing, is going back to Barca wouldn't really be a new challenge for him. He's kind of already done that challenge. So I imagine one day he'll leave Bayern and go somewhere else, but I doubt it will be Barca. I would say the odds, because Kareem specifically said, what are the odds? I'm going to say 40-1. Because, you know, I'm also a Vegas bookmaker in my off time.
I'll go even lower. I'll say 100-1 or 200-1. I just don't think he's going to come. I just think the price is too high. And like you said, I don't think he's so sentimental to come back to Barca, where, you know, there could be a negotiation for that. I think he's happy in Bayern. And yeah, we missed out on that opportunity. You know, midfielders are really hard to find, especially, you know, we saw flashes of his talent during the Barca days when he was on the team. And it's just unfortunate that they just kind of gave up on him and sold him to Bayern.
Yeah, it was a real shame. Thank you, Kareem, for the question. And our last one, Gabriel, you actually threw this into our show notes. Why don't you lead this one off?
Yeah, this question comment comes from Luis CelloFCB10 on Twitter, and he was asking, what do you guys think about Irving Lozano for Barca? He plays with PSV. He's a great 1v1, better than Deuces, Deulofeu. So I looked up his stats and, of course, his amazing YouTube mixtape, obviously. So he's like the greatest player you've ever seen. But I think, you know, Luis brought up some good a good player here. He's a very young winger for the Mexican national team. He's about 22 years old. He's playing for PSV. He's a regular starter, very quick. He could play left wing or right wing in a 4-2-3-1. I think it would be a good fit. And also, PSV is known to sell their players for a good price. They're never really a club that's looking to sell a player for more than, you know, 30 million or something like this. So I think if Lozano was on Barcelona's radar, they could get him for a good price. And I think he would be a really good fit. I think he has a lot of experience already internationally, being on the Mexican national team. And I think he would be a good fit because he's quick with his feet. He has good passing. You know, he's almost like a prototypical Barca player. You know, he's not super strong, not super tall, but really good and really cerebral. And so those are the type of players we want for Barca if we're going to invest in a midfielder outside of La Masia. So I will definitely check, be following him a little bit more, and we'll see. But I think this is a really good, interesting point from Luis to point out this player. Because like I said, if he's an upgrade from Deulofeu, you could probably get this guy for like 10 million. And that would be a steal.
Yeah, well, his current market value, according to transfermarket.com, is 15 million euro. But that's not to say that if Barcelona wanted him, they couldn't get him maybe for a little bit less or, you know, some deal. But, yeah, I mean, that's still, compared with what we paid for Dembele, that's a bargain.
Correct. And the age of him, 22, maybe if we offer him Vermaelen, a bag of balls, and the money, maybe we can get Lozano.
What kind of balls?
Yeah, we'll give you a bag of really nice soccer balls from Nike, and we'll also throw in Vermaelen. And they're like, oh, the transfer fee is now 14,500,000.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, the bag of balls had more weight on that than Vermaelen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But thank you, Luis, for that question. That was good. We're going to keep an eye on Lozano now. Maybe I'll watch some Dutch League if possible. But that pretty much does it. Those are all the comments and questions that we got this week. Thanks to everyone, all three of you, who chimed in this week. We appreciate it. Keep them coming. And again, you can just go to BarcaTalk.net to find whatever channel you want to communicate with us through. We check all of them, and we respond to all of them. Now, getting into some news and notes, it's been a sort of a slow week. I didn't do any particular workup on this, but as far as the club goes, they had a big symposium on sports technology. They had over 600 people speaking, and well, I don't know if 600 people spoke. A lot of people came, and it was like 2 or 3 days of all kinds of talks. They had people from NASA there giving presentations on sports technology, so I think that that's peripherally interesting to me to see, you know, how the club is involved in hosting these events about, you know, improving sports technology. But they're also, that's having to do with fitness and player fitness and tracking, that sort of thing, but also, you know, marketing and all the various ways that technology can help the sports world. That was a small thing that happened this week, and I just want to mention it. Like I said, I didn't really do a whole workup on it, so I don't really have a report for you. But I did think that that was barely of note, so I just want to mention it. But two things that I did want to talk about this week were that Dembele seems to be on a good road to recovery. The club released a video of him this week doing some physical training, and it was all low-impact stuff, nothing with the ball, but he's starting to look good. And, of course, you know, it's just for them it's a slow week because there weren't any first-team games, so that's probably why they released this video. It's not that anything particularly monumental has happened, but at the same time, it's good to see him working and, you know, out on the field doing some physical work and training.
Yeah, I mean, like we always talk about with injuries, you know, you just want to make sure that, you know, he's about 90% healthy, because, you know, it's really hard to become 100%. But again, I just hope he comes in the beginning of January. I just don't want to use him for the Clásico. Just save him for January where he's fully fit, fully integrated, and doesn't have all this pressure. Because, you know, if we're in the Clásico and he comes and he gets hurt again, then who knows how long he's going to be out. So just ease him back, right? I mean, he's super young. Yeah, of course, it would be great to have him now. But at the same time, we just need to watch and monitor. I mean, this is going into our next news with Luis Suarez's interview with Barca TV about his injury status. But it's just, you know, this is always a fine line because, you know, the medical staff have the diagnostics to see to a point, but the player also has to feel good and also psychologically be ready to do all the full movement that they normally do. And that's always a really fine line to dance around. So I just hope, since Dembele is so important to the future of the club, that they take their time and they make sure that he's close to 100% before he comes out to play.
Yeah, I mean, he seems really optimistic and he seems really in high spirits. And I imagine that the competitor in him wants him to, you know, he wants to get back out on the pitch as soon as possible. But I think that the club is taking the right attitude with him. And they're just saying, you know, just take your time. We're not in a rush. Let's get you fully fit. And like we've talked about before, it was a really, really serious injury that he sustained. So they need to make sure that he's getting rehabilitated and recovering properly before they put any pressure on him. And, you know, there were even rumors that the injury itself came from him maybe feeling a little bit of pressure to perform, and he didn't tell them that he was feeling a little tenderness or some problems in his leg, and he played, and then he made that sprint, and he just tore it up. So, you know, I think this has been probably a big learning experience for him, and assuming that he recovers well, and he probably should, then that actually could help him, you know, moving forward throughout the rest of his career. But yeah, and now you mentioned this, but our next little note was that Luis Suarez did an interview with Barca TV this week, and he was talking about a number of things, but the couple of bullet points that I pulled from that were that he was saying that both the medical staff at Barca and at Uruguay agreed that he should have a rest, so that's why he was in Barcelona to give the interview. He didn't go to wherever Uruguay is playing their international matches. He's taking a rest at the recommendation of medical staffs at both Barcelona and the Uruguay team. So that was good that he pointed that out, because we were talking about that last week, that, you know, he hasn't been performing really well lately. He hasn't been doing the thing that we hope for him to do, which is mainly score goals. And we were you were saying specifically that, you know, maybe he just needs a bit of rest, and the medical staffs agreed, so they gave him that rest. He's been training, but he's been training alone. I don't know if he's been on the ball or not, but he's been sort of training by himself separately from the other players who weren't called up for international duty. They had some training sessions, but he was kind of doing his own individual training sessions at the same time. And yeah, they're just giving him a rest. And as far as the whole, you know, not scoring goals thing, he says that he's the first to criticize himself in this interview. He says, you know, I can score more goals, but at times the ball just doesn't want to go in. And then he really emphasized just the team and helping the team, being grateful that they've managed to put up wins without his goals, but recognizing at the same time that, he could score more goals and he wants to. I'm not sure how I feel about this whole, like, at times the ball just doesn't want to go in thing. What are your thoughts on that?
That's some, like, voodoo magic, you know? The ball doesn't want to go in. False. Like, I understand that. You know, sometimes you're unlucky and that happens. But, you know, we've all had this, right? We've had to maybe write a paper, or maybe for you had to compose something. For me, sometimes when I have to create visual art for social media or something, we're looking at something for so long that we lose the creativity or we lose the focus. And sometimes it's mandatory that we step away. We kind of take a break from it and we come back. And all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, like with the writing, maybe I can figure this out. And I just think that's what Suarez needs to do. He just needs to kind of maybe not suit up for two games, watch from the stadium, maybe see different things and say, okay, and just take his mind off of it. You know, when you press and you press and you press trying to score a goal, it just becomes worse, you know? And I just think he just needs, I mean, what's two games? That's nothing, you know? And I bet you he's going to become fresher and he's going to become hungrier and he will find the back of the net. You know, like we always talk about, he provides so many other things for us up front that we need him completely on board. And just taking this little mental vacation is maybe what he needs. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Maybe, you know, it'll help him, you know, for the rest of the season. So, like I say, it's never a bad thing to take. Everyone wants to play starting minutes, right? Messi always wants to play. Suarez wants to play. But sometimes you just need to pump the brakes a little bit and take a timeout and come back even hungrier and stronger and fresher more than anything.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole like voodoo thing about the ball not wanting to go in. I mean, it's that you're not getting the right angles, but you're dealing with very, very fine angles. Like I get that, like you're just like a little bit off. But yeah, it's the ball has no desires of its own. But I absolutely agree that it would be good if he just didn't suit up for a game or two, and yeah, took a step back. Because yeah, we've all experienced that, just like you say, in the small things that we do versus the more, you know, public things that he does. It's all the same, right? Like maybe he has a little bit of the yips right now. He's a little bit too in his head, maybe, and he just needs to step back a little bit. And the club can do that right now. Like they're doing well. They've put up mostly wins. They had one draw in the league. They could absolutely get away with just putting Alcacer in there. Alcacer has been playing really well when he's played. So, you know, give him the nod. Let Suarez sit out. Step back for a minute. Absolutely, I agree. Moving on to Barça B and FCB Femení, the women's side. We want to check in with them. It was kind of a not great week for Barça B. They started off with a 1-1 draw against Cultural Leonesa, which was good. They had a goal from Lozano, and I watched the highlights of that. It was actually a really strong attacking display, but they weren't finishing their chances well. They made a lot of chances, but they just weren't finishing most of them. They just got that one goal from Lozano. And it was their fourth consecutive draw, which at the time was good as far as what we hope for from Barça B. You know, we just want them to get points, stay in the second division so that they can, you know, keep playing the teams that have been relegated recently, the ones who have more Primera Division experience. So as long as they can stay in the second division, we're happy. So four draws in a row or a bunch of draws, like we're basically okay with that. But then on Saturday, they lost to Huesca 2-0. Currently, they're 14th in the table. They have 14 points in 16 matches, 3 wins, 7 draws, 4 losses. But so you look at that whole record, I think that's, you know, about where we want them to be. And again, the important thing is that certain players are getting the minutes, they're getting time, and they're getting experience with older, more experienced sides so that they can eventually, hopefully, shift into the first team. And of course, the players I'm watching most are Nice and Carlos Alenia, but I also have my eye on Vitinho more and more right now as far as shifting up to the first team eventually. You know, hope, fingers crossed. But that's what's going on with Barça B. Gabriel, what's going on with the women's side?
So FCB Feminine had 2 games this week. Currently, they're going to play their Sunday league game tonight. So as we're recording, they have not played, but they had a important Champions League midweek. I watched most of the game. It was quite interesting, just because you knew that FCB Femini were going to smash this other team, just because FCB Femini just has more resources, better players, and sure enough, they won 6-0. All the goals were pretty good, most of them from set plays. But the really nice one was Toni Dugan's golazo. She had one where she just turned and fired, upper 90, really nice goal. So really good victory for the ladies. They're chugging through Champions League, so they'll qualify through this round. As of right now in the league, they are second behind Atletico Madrid, but Atletico Madrid played yesterday, so that's why they're ahead with 25 points. FCB Feminine are with 22. And yeah, so they're going to play later on tonight, 6 o'clock local time here in Madrid. And then this week they have another 2 games. They have, again, the Lithuanian team comes to Barcelona, so they should be able to win that match as well. And then they have another league game on Sunday in Tenerife. So that is the roundup for FCB Femini. They just keep cruising along, not giving up goals and scoring many goals. You know, they're super talented compared to a lot of other international women's team with Martins and Dugan at the top doing a lot of the attacking for them. But they're just striding along just like the men's team.
Yeah, some of those plays, like there was a play where Martins brought it down and put an amazing cross in. Like, she is just incredible out on the left side. She's a really strong winger, and she makes great crosses, great moves, get past defenders. And also, I'm looking at the table right now. It really seems like the rivalry here, or the title race in the women's league, is between us and Atletico Madrid. They've been pretty much tied on points this whole time. Of course, when they played each other, they drew. And assuming that FCB wins their game tonight, they'll be tied on points, but they have a much better goal differential. They've scored 31, like you were saying. They're just like a goal machine. They've scored 31 goals and only conceded 2 in the league, which is really good numbers. So we assume, or we hope, that they'll win tonight. You know, you can't take anything for granted, obviously. But yeah, that title race between them and Atletico, because after that, Athletic Bilbao is in third place by like 7 points behind. So it seems like that league is really shaping up to be a two-horse race, mostly with Atletico, which I thought is interesting. Notice that does Real Madrid even have a women's team?
No, and that's another reason why you should never support Real Madrid. They hate women. So they, I'm just kidding.
I love how you, like, everything that is bad in the world are qualities that your rival has.
Correct.
Yeah, they hate women. I think they're actually Nazis.
Yeah. So no, they just don't have. I don't think they just really looked at it as a business plan for them. I think they're just mainly focused as a men's team. I would be interested to see the Madrid team that is currently, or who FCB Femenil are going to play this today, if they eventually become integrated with Real Madrid. I think that's what they would want. But I also think Real Madrid just doesn't want to put any type of extra resources into things they don't think are very beneficial to their overall business plan. But that's why Barcelona is such a great entity, because it's like an all-encompassing more sport, right? So they're more inclusive with this type of thing. They see the future with women's football, and it's just another thing of branding. So maybe Real Madrid eventually catches up to it, but I think that's really interesting that Atletico have invested into a women's team. So they're probably taking all the best players here in Madrid already. So it'll be very difficult for Real Madrid to start up again, but you never know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, see how the women's game shapes up. You know, we're going to be here for a while doing this show, and we'll keep tracking how the women's game progresses. Moving forward, though, this is our big feature story for the week, and I have to say I'm really excited about this. I've heard about the 91-92 Dream Team, and I know a little bit about it. I know that Cruyff was very involved. I wasn't super familiar with many of the players, but this was your baby, Gabriel. Since we didn't have any matches to talk about, we want to feature and relive the dream of 91-92, particularly because it was a longer-term project, but it seems like that season, 91-92, was really where Cruyff's project really hit its apex. But I don't want to put words in your mouth. This is more your thing. So let's start talking about the 91-92 Dream Team. What do you got?
All right. So, you know, when we were talking about what we were going to talk about, I think this topic is a really great topic because, you know, for example, like, you're a new Kool Aid, right? So you may not have known so much about the Dream Team and how important it was. And for me, I didn't really know that much until later on, like maybe 2000, about this team, just because I followed a bunch of these players through the World Cup. But like you said, this was a culmination of what Cruyff came, you know, put together, the style, the players that he signed, everything came together for this 91-92 dream season. So they won La Liga, they won the Supercopa de España, they won the European Cup, which is now the Champions League, and they also won the much tested Gamper trophy that we joke about. So all in all, it was a great season. Unfortunately, in the Copa del Rey, they got bounced in the round of 16. But at that time, it was much more difficult. It was much more competitive. So the Copa del Rey, I can see them being bounced. But, you know, Cruyff arrived in 88 with this vision to bring the style of football to Barcelona. And, you know, at that time in Spanish football, it was super boring. you know, like we were talking earlier before we started really recording the podcast today, that the Spanish teams would just show up with a ball and they would, their mentality was, okay, let's just try to get a point here and just get a tie and just kind of pass the ball around. And if I happen to score, great, but I'm not going to go after the win. And that was kind of the mentality of the Spanish football at that time. And it's very interesting because I came across this quote that Cruyff said. He said, "Since I'm the manager, I have to watch every game and I want to watch beautiful football. So I'm going to implement my style, which is attacking football." And so when he arrived at Barca, he completely changed the formation. He changed to a 3-5-2. And at this time, this was like, you know, the biggest revolution in football because everyone was always playing a 4-4-2. It was so set in stone everywhere around the world. And so he decided to go with this 3-5-2. Now, before he came to Barcelona, he was an Ajax and he already won a European Cup and it was super successful, but now he wanted to do it on a bigger stage in Barcelona. And so when I was going across investigating this for the podcast, I came across a couple documentaries and reading different things. And really what it comes down to is the signing of these four Basque players. And they are Jose Maria Baquero, Julio Salinas, Andoni Goycochea, and Jose Ramon Alexanico. And when he signed these players, they were like basically the backbone of the team with attitude, toughness, technical ability, and overall just being really solid players. Have you ever heard of any of these players before?
Well, I have now because just yesterday I was actually watching the 92 European Cup final. And I was, I also have heard of them because I'd been doing some searching and I found this awesome music video of some Barcelona players showing off their rapping skills. And, you know, it's kind of weird to think about like where Europe was at the time because this was 91. I mean, I think that video was maybe from 90, 91. But you look at the fashions, you know, they got the kind of baggy stonewashed jeans with the sort of patterned rayoned button downs tucked in. You know, the hair is a little bit floppy. And then they got the dancers doing some, I guess it was kind of 90s, but it seems like, you know, they're a little bit behind maybe where the United States were. I kind of felt like, am I at a middle school dance or am I at a high school dance? It's a little hard to say because, like, the dancers had the overall shorts with the one strap undone and that kind of thing. But, yeah, I was watching that. I'm like, okay, I don't know who these players are. I recognize Koeman. But it turns out, like, Baquero was in there, Laudrup was in there, and now that I've been doing more watching, now I know more about who they are because I was preparing for this week, and I was watching my own documentaries, videos, doing some reading, and now I know who those players are, and particularly in that final, like, when Goycochea came off the bench, like, he was, like, made, like, such a big impact in that game, like, and all those Basque players, you know, Zubizarreta came from the Basque country also, but mm-hmm. a little bit earlier, I think. He was already there when Cruyff arrived, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, these players, I'm now very familiar with them. Well, as much as I can be.
Yeah, so that rap video we'll post on the Facebook because that thing is magic. It's pure magic. The magic is on the tape, you know, like in Boogie Nights. The magic is ours. It's on the tapes, right?
Yeah. yeah, that's so, a real gem.
Yeah. So we'll definitely post it because it's hilarious. It's just, it's pure 90s, terrible hip hop, you know, music. It's almost like a karaoke session. Anyway, we digress. So that was the big thing was that Cruyff installed at 3-5-2. You know, and the whole thing about this was overloading the midfield and the defense didn't know where the attack was coming because all those, the seven players were able to go forward. And so that created chaos for the defense. Now, Cruyff also installed, which was, you know, revolutionary at the time, was to start the possession with the goalkeeper. And so Zubizarreta was the goalkeeper. And at that time, remember, they could pick up the ball. So they could pick up the ball with their hands. So they pick up the ball and they would roll it to the fullback and then the fullback would give it to the midfield and so on, just like we see today. So that was a huge step because before, goalkeepers were considered not football players. They were just considered, you know, just to stop the ball and do that. But Cruyff wanted to use that as an extra player, as an advantage. And so he made Zubizarreta use his feet as much as possible, pick up the ball, and think short passing as opposed to long passing, only in emergency cases. So that was like one of the biggest, you know, the 3-5-2 and the possession starting with the goalkeeper. And at that time, that was just like, you know, fire. you know, with the caveman. It was just like super revolutionary. right? You like that? You know, fire with the caveman.
Like that. Yeah.
And no, because, you know, no one wanted to experiment so much with different formations at that time because it just wasn't heard of, you know. And so Cruyff coming up with the 3-5-2, you know, and when you watch the videos of the Dream Team, the way they pass and going through, you see the defense when they see a midfielder coming through on a through ball, they're just like, what just happened? They're just like, what is going on? Because they were always so accustomed to marking up the two forwards at the top. So again, this took a while to implement, right? So he came in 88. The first season, you know, it was okay. The second season, okay. But again, the final culmination of all these tactics, players, everything was the 91-92 season. So we want to highlight some players and some of the most important players and of the 91-92 Dream Team. So the first player we're going to highlight is Ronald Koeman. Now, Brian, did you know anything before we worked up? Did you know anything about Ronald Koeman?
I had heard of Ronald Koeman before this because for some reason, he just sort of pops up a lot more when you're researching Barca and getting a sense for Barcelona. He just sort of comes up a little bit more. He's more at the top of the radar. So I didn't know what position he played. I know that he scored the winning goal in that European Cup final. So maybe just because of that, I knew about him before. I know that he manages now. I forget where exactly. I think he's back in his home country managing in Holland, if I'm not mistaken. So that's where I was at with Koeman.
Okay. So basically the biggest thing with Koeman is he was a revolutionary center back, right? So since they were playing three in the back, not only was he a physical specimen back in the day, but he was the free kick specialist, and he was also the director of the defense and also the distribution passing forward. And at this time, again, this was revolutionary because, like we've talked about, a 4-4-2, you had a pairing, and they were not considered responsible for starting the attack. But Koeman was an amazing player at that time, was able to pass, was physical, and he was probably the most important player on the team because everything kind of ran through him. And he was one of Cruyff's most important and first signings. So he was with Barca for a long time. And of course, that free kick in Wembley is the most iconic free kick in Barcelona history. Let's move on to another great player, Michael Laudrup. What about Michael Laudrup? Anything on him, Brian?
I think I've heard his name, but until this last week, I had never seen any examples of him playing. I've never seen any footage of him. So, like, for a new Kool-Aid like me, it was great to sort of go back and look at some footage of Laudrup in action.
Yeah, so he was a really important player because he was a midfielder that could play. He kind of blurred the lines between being a striker and an attacking midfield. And that was super important in the 3-5-2 because he could run through, make proper runs, and he can shoot from outside. He was really creative. My first heard of him on the Danish team in the World Cup of, like, I think it was 86, so a long time ago. But he was super important, and he brought this creative dynamic in the midfield that Barcelona was lacking for a long time. So along with Laudrup and the four Basque players we talked about, it was a great mixture of toughness, creativity, and passing. So they were able to possess the ball for a long amount of time, but also when the final third run came, they were able to convert and score a lot of goals. So again, these other teams didn't know how to match up with it. They just didn't know where the runs were coming. Since you had five in the midfield, you overran them. And so that was really huge in important games. Now let's move on to one of my favorite players of all time. Seriously, this is one of my favorite players, Hristo Stoichkov. What about him? Did you know anything about him?
No. I mean, same kind of thing with Laudrup. It's like, I've heard the name, I have seen current pictures of him, but I hadn't really seen him in action until going back and looking at old footage this past week. But I know that you, based on your interview with Francesc from the Barcelona podcast, I know that both of you really have a thing for Stoichkov. Like, if you were to get one Barca player tattooed on your body, I think it would be Stoichkov for you, right?
Yeah, he'd be top three. It would be like, I love mom, and then underneath would be Stoichkov, right? So something like this.
Well, with the mullet that he was sporting back in the 90s, yeah, he might kind of look like a mother.
Oh, yeah. For me, not only was he a physical presence, but, you know, he had the nickname The Boss, and he just had this swagger about him. And, like, I was a left-footed player, so I looked at him as an icon, as an idol. His left foot was spectacular. So much power and accuracy. And I may just link on Facebook as well. He has this goal from the 94 World Cup that is just on a counter that is just magic. And so, you know, Stoichkov brought this physicality that Barca had never really had before. So, you know, this grand mixture of possessing the ball, having Koeman in the back, these Basque players, the dynamic creativity of Laudrup and Eusebio as well, and then also having Stoichkov as the point man, like, it's just a great team that, you know, if you watch the games, you can, you know, it doesn't look so so aged, this type of thing. So, you know, these are the players that we wanted to highlight and the system and also why it was revolutionary, because before, none of this had ever been used or investigated for football matches.
Yeah, and I had a question real quick, actually, about how none of these players, either the four Basque players or Koeman or Laudrup or Stoichkov, none of them were, even at the time, I don't think, considered like megastars. I mean, nowadays we have, with the media being what it is and branding and all that sort of thing, like, it's actually easier to be a megastar in a way, whereas in the early 90s, like, I don't know, I'm thinking, like, here in America, right, we had Jordan, right? Or before that, we had, like, Magic Johnson in basketball. Like, they were, like, superstars because they both, they did a lot of endorsements and they engaged with the media and they sort of liked being in the spotlight. They weren't just playing their game. But I feel like almost everyone on this Barcelona team were not high-ticket players. They were just really good players. Cruyff knew what he wanted, and he put them together into a team so that he could give them, they could give him, I should say, the result that he wanted. You know, he wasn't going after stars. None of them were particularly big names. And of course, this is prior to, you know, the age of Beckham and that sort of thing. But what are your thoughts on their kind of like star status at the time and how that actually helped the team or contributed to the team?
Yeah, definitely. That was one of Cruyff's best attributes, was his ability to find talent. And so when he came to Barca, so like, for example, Stoichkov was playing in the Bulgarian league and he found him. Like, that's crazy. Even like pre-internet, you know, so he somehow saw him in the European Cup and made a note of it. And he signed him for dirt cheap. Also, Laudrup was on Juventus before. And he was kind of a sub, like he was playing a lot, but he wasn't also like he was having some problems in Juventus. And Cruyff made a note of it and signed him, you know, these type of signings. So, and the Basque players, he was able to get them at a good price. So not only was he finding really, you know, underused players, but he also found them at a good price. And they all came together and they had really good chemistry, which, you know, chemistry goes a long way. It's hard to measure, hard to find. And that really helped with the 91-92 dream season. Yeah, and so this came to, like we said, a culmination of the European Cup final that was played on Wembley the 20th of May in 1992, and that was against the Italian team Sampdoria. And when I was reading these documentaries and stuff, Sampdoria was also a quality team at the time, and both Barca and Sampdoria were both fighting for their first European championship, and so this was very important to both teams. This game was well fought. Sampdoria had three crucial chances. They could have taken the lead, but for whatever reason, they couldn't find the back of the net. And obviously, this game went into extra time, where Koeman in the 112th minute hit the free kick heard around the world. Such a great set piece. If you watch the replays of it, Koeman gets the ball through this little window that just, you know, in a split second. And basically, Stoichkov rolls the ball to Baquero. Baquero stops the ball, puts it on a tee for Koeman, basically. And Koeman just, you know, as he said in the interview I was watching, he said, I just put my head down and just try to hit it as I always did in practice. And sure enough, he hit it perfectly out of the reach of the goalkeeper for Sampdoria. And Koeman was the hero for Barcelona. And of course, again, it's just crazy that Koeman, as a center back, was the leading scorer of the European Cup season that season, you know, through Champions League or the Champions League before that. So it's crazy to think that the center back had the most goals for Barca. So that's how important he was Barcelona was able to finally win their first cup. You know, this was really important because before this, Real Madrid had won four, I think, or four or five. And I know those were in the 50s and the 70s and stuff, but still, they still had that, those European championships over Barcelona. So Barcelona was always looking to get their first one. And so this was a really pivotal moment, you know, for Barcelona, Catalunya. And yeah, so this basically shaped the team that we watch now, the tactics, the philosophy, La Masia, the history that we have is all developed from this culmination of this one dream season of winning everything possibly except for the Copa del Rey.
Yeah. And like that final, you know, there were a lot of chances on both sides, but like, I think probably the biggest heartbreaking one was the attempt from Stoichkov that came off the post. Like he had it, he was clear and it was a good shot, but it was just a tiny, tiny bit outside and it came off the post and such a heartbreaker. And then, you know, when it goes into extra time, you know, you're getting to the 112th minute, you're like 8-9 minutes away from this whole thing being done and then going to the most bullshit way to decide a winner in all of sports, which is the so-called penalty shootout. I hate it. And so I'm always really like happy and satisfied when a goal can happen during the actual game. But yeah, just all the chances that they missed, I'm so glad that they, you know, scored in the game. And that free kick was, I could watch it over and over again. I've watched it several times this week. But also, watching that game is when you talk about how the Barca style, you know, mostly came from Cruyff. If you watch like that final, or I imagine any of their games from those years, you see Guardiola on the ball, or you see Koeman on the ball, and I see Busquets of today. You know, Busquets today does kind of what Koeman and Guardiola both did in that, like in the final at least. And I imagine that was a lot of their season they were playing like that. You just see like all these echoes and the same kinds of things. I mean, of course, nowadays the game is faster. It's like even more technical. And I think, you know, we have Messi to thank for that because now we have Messi on the pitch. So you can't compare it really. But looking at like the midfield and how they build up play with Koeman and how Guardiola was just so brilliant at maintaining possession and anchoring that spot right in front of Koeman. Like I keep seeing Busquets in it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Like, you can integrate the players of our team today or maybe from 2011 and put them on the 92 team. And that's where you see the similarities, the echoes that you talked about. And again, it just all comes to the culmination. You know, when you have a style, like a footballistic style, let's say, it comes from somewhere and this is where it came from. And I always just think it's interesting to see how different it was back then, how revolutionary it was. Because when you watch the highlights of these goals, I just laugh because you just see the defense and how lost they look because they just don't know because they'd never seen it before. It's like we said, it's like caveman that didn't see fire before. It's all of a sudden you see this fire, like, wow, what's going on, you know? And they just see these through runs coming at them and they're just like, where do I go, you know? And so, yeah, so that's why it was revolutionary. And this game, again, was super tough game. Both teams had chances. It went to extra time. Fortunately, Koeman got that goal. You know, in these big games, you get so physically taxed and also so mentally taxed that these little moments, you know, that's when the superstars become the superstars because of these moments in these big games, high-pressure situations. And, of course, Koeman delivered. And it was funny because I was watching a documentary where Pep Guardiola was talking about Koeman and about how in practice he's so clinical. And so he had a feeling that this was the moment for Koeman to score the goal at this moment because he had watched them so many times preparing for this specific one chance. And of course, Koeman was able to bring that first European Cup to Barcelona. Hip, hip, hooray.
Yeah. Oh, and I did have one other thought about the whole victim complex thing, right? Because like you were saying, Madrid, they had won some European Cup finals. Barcelona never had prior to this. And of course, they're huge rivals. So apparently, you know, before Cruyff came, there was a lot of victim complex at Barcelona. And it's kind of hard to imagine if you're a Barcelona fan now and if you've, you know, joined up following Barcelona in recent years. They've been doing so much winning, like this whole era of Messi and even before that with Ronaldinho and all that kind of winning. It's hard to imagine that Barcelona would be suffering from a victim complex, but apparently they really were. And Cruyff came in and he just changed all of that. He changed the whole mindset of the club so that they would they could think like winners and be winners.
Yeah, totally true. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? They always felt like second-class team to Real Madrid at that moment because, you know, they were both successful teams, but Real Madrid had more European championships to that point. So, yeah, you definitely have a good point there that they had this complex, you know, it's almost like a big brother, little brother complex. Like, we were just as good, but they had more trophies. And it was kind of, you know, they just kept one-upping us on that front. So that really much concludes, you know, what the 91-92 Dream Team brought to FC Barcelona, how they able to change the culture, the tactics, the philosophy to what we see today that we're still using. And, you know, when I went to the museum, they have a whole section to this team, and it's amazing. You can watch video highlights of the players. They have player profiles, and, of course, they have the trophy on display, the first one. Which is, you know, the first one's always kind of the most important, you know, and the most, or the one that you usually remember. You know, I wasn't a Barca fan at that time, but I can appreciate the history and obviously the importance of that first European championship.
Also, you know, I was thinking, like, what was I doing when this was happening? So, like, May 92, what was I doing? And it's kind of interesting to think about how something so monumental in a club that we now both love so much, when that was happening, both of us were just, you know, living our lives in California. We were young, because we're pretty much the same age, you and I, and we were like, we probably didn't even, I mean, I didn't even realize that there was so much football in the world. You know, that's like what it was like growing up then in the States. I mean, your dad, I think, exposed you to it more, so maybe you had a better idea. But like, when I was a kid, We went to games of this horrible, like, low division team called the California Surf. I think it was the North American Soccer League, or, you know, one of those kind of like second tier things. But like, I didn't realize that soccer was so big in the world. And I think back to 92, I guess I was in my freshman year of high school, and you know, I was starting to just like learn Metallica songs and play guitar, and I was growing my hair long and wearing all black, and, you know, trying to get my stick up my finger to the man. And now here I am, 40-year-old man, looking back on this footage thinking like, oh man, I wish I'd have seen that. I wish it. I mean, but the way I was then and the way I am and the way I am now, like, the way I was then and whatever was happening with Barcelona at the time just really had nothing in common. I don't think it was ever going to mix, but it's almost like I don't know. It's like I wish my life had gone differently so that I'd have been aware of it.
I mean, I'm with you, you know, like, there was like this whole other thing going across the ocean, you know, like this dream team phenomenon, you know, was sweeping Europe, and we were totally oblivious to it. You know, at that moment in 92, I was only focused on my 49ers, the, you know, who else was watching Michael Jordan at that time. And, you know, I didn't, you know, because of TV coverage and news, you just didn't know anything about what was going across the pond. You know, for me with soccer or football, like, I've always been into the World Cup, and that was my first exposure. And then eventually that led to watching leagues, but that wasn't until later down the line. So for me, like, I found these players watching the World Cup, but I had no idea, you know, about the Dream Team or Cruyff or any of this stuff. So I always find it fascinating, like you said, to go back and check it out, because I too was trying to learn lyrics to Metallica at that time. So,
well, that was right after the Black Album came out, you know, so that was,
exactly,
that was really their first crossover success. I mean, artistically speaking, you know, it's an inferior album, but it had a lot more pop appeal.
Correct. Unforgiven and Unforgiven 2?
Unforgiven. Oh, man. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I found myself playing Unforgiven, you know, trying to impress girls. It did not work. But
I have a quick antidote. Unforgiven was the official song of our makeout parties. So let that sink in for a little bit.
Man, that is a weird, fucked up song to be having at your makeout parties.
I mean, the main goal was to find slow songs, you know. And at that time,
nothing else matters, dude.
Okay, that too. That was also on there. That was also on the mixtape, you know.
Totally.
So, you know, nothing more romantic than Metallica slow songs, you know.
And then you mix in a little Boys to Men. You know.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. Motown Philly. Yeah. Something like this.
But anyway, we digress again. But just to put a cap on this, I love that we talked about this week. and it was a great feature story. And we both watched a lot of footage, did a lot of research over the week to get ready to kind of talk about this. And frankly, what we've talked about today was just kind of a distillation of everything that we took in over the week. And if you're a newer Kool-Aid such as myself, go back and look at some of these documentaries, watch some of this footage. It's really incredible because, you know, the Barca that we know and love today can, it doesn't go back as far as 1899, really. It really goes back to 1988. Like, the Barcelona that we know and love now started in 1988 when Johan Cruyff came, and that dream team in 91-92 and how it all came together there. That set up everything that has been happening at Barcelona ever since. So if you love Barcelona now, and especially if you're newer, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be too prescriptive and like tell you what is and isn't okay, but I'm just saying that I feel like I've really learned this week just the significance of that team. So if you haven't gone back and looked at some of that footage and learned more about it, I highly recommend that you do, because I found it to be a really great experience on a week where there weren't any league games to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to look at that footage. You know, you've got to remember that history, that why it's so important, and it's just fascinating. I think YouTube is one of the greatest. You know, for me, YouTube is like my fire. Like, it's this revolutionary thing that you can watch anything you want, and watching FC Barcelona videos, I could just be stuck watching that. I just love watching highlights and goals and all these mixtapes that people are so creative putting together. So I really appreciate those people that put those videos, but it's just fascinating to see, like you said, to see the echoes of Barcelona today back from 1988, 89, 91, 92, all these years from before. So good point there that, you know, yeah, the club was founded in 1899, but it really, you know, the Barcelona we know and love today, it really started, you know, 1988 with Cruyff became the manager and really put everything into motion.
Yeah. So so go check all that stuff out. For us, we're going to move ahead with the episode and look forward to some present day matches that are going to be happening this week. The first one is going to be in La Liga. That's going to be on the 18th of November against Leganés in Madrid. So they're going to be on the road. Actually, Barcelona does have a few road games coming up. They're not going to be playing in the Camp Nou anytime soon for the current stretch. So the first one against Leganés, what do you think, Gabriel? Do we need to be worried? What are the concerns? Because whenever they go on the road, we get a little bit worried, right?
I mean, but, you know, as we've seen this year, it's just a different season. And I think they're just more focused. I think with Valverde, putting different lineups, it gives those new players even more focus to concentrate on these lower tier teams. So I think they'll get away with the win again. And Leganés, not really a highly touted stadium. It's not a hard place to play. Again, it's in Madrid, but it's in the outskirts of Madrid. And I definitely think they'll be able to get the points and continue with the unbeaten streak.
Well, now Leganés are around ninth place right now in the table. So they're not exactly a bottom of the table kind of team. Although Athletic Bilbao is, I'd say, still a good club, and they're in 15th place. So, you know, things can happen. But it seems like Leganés is actually having a fairly decent season so far.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like, right, like, a Leganés is going to be gunning for them for sure. But, you know, I think Valverde, especially after this international break, getting the focus, they've just been more focused on these away games that they kind of had problems last year, the 2 years before under Luis Enrique. I think Valverde is really using the bench well. You know, obviously, like we talked about, not using Semedo enough. Maybe he uses Semedo in this game. I'm not too worried about the match. I think they'll be able to get the victory for sure.
Yeah, well, I think Semedo starting is probably a pretty good odds because I think Sergio Roberto is still injured. They're still waiting for him to come back. So Semedo is should really be taking advantage of this time. I mean, I'm really sad that Sergio Roberto is injured because, you know, I love him with all my heart. But I think it's also a good opportunity for Semedo to, you know, show what he can do and perform. Now, also, I think I know the answer to this, but do you think Alcacer should start and Luis Suarez should sit out?
Definitely, yes. I think this is a tailor-made game for Paco Alcacer because I think he can exploit the Leganés defense with his speed better than Luis Suarez. And I think that Paco's playing with a lot of confidence. Like we said, he's every game he's played in, he's scored a goal. And so I think ride that momentum and just give Luis Suarez a break and let's ride Paco. I mean, we know Messi's going to play and, you know, go to a 4-3-3 with deuces. I don't know. But I definitely think that Paco should start. I think that would be a great, I think would be a great freshness to the team to give that. He's going to press high and also he's going to give that defense problems with his speed.
Yeah. Now, look, thinking about the other game also, because the lineup for Leganés, I think, will probably be affected by the fact that just 4 days later, on the 22nd, Barca is going to be playing Juventus in Turin at Allianz Stadium in the Champions League. Now, of course, these two sides are still in competition with each other for the top spot in the group. It looks pretty clear that those are the ones who are going through. That's exactly how we knew it was going to go when the groups were drawn. But, of course, the fight is still to see who's going to come out on top of the group. And since there's only 4 days between the league match with Leganés, a weaker side against Juventus, which even though we handled them really well in the first round at the Camp Nou, you know, you never know. They're a really good side, and they've had some time to probably, you know, get their things together some more. And so I haven't really been following Juventus, but I imagine that it's not going to be an easy match. So you might want to rest some players in the Leganés match, maybe not start Iniesta, maybe save him for the Juventus match. Maybe Denis Suarez will get the nod against Leganés. But all of those lineup decisions have to be taken into account for Leganés because we're going to be playing Juventus just a few days later.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it's definitely going to, you know, tell us what Valgrin is thinking for the Juventus game based on the Leganés game, right? If he goes younger and more squad players, then he'll know that he's saving those players for Juventus. But yeah, it's going to be a difficult match. It's always a difficult place to play. You know, when you're the home team in Champions League, it's so much easier. It's so much more comfortable because you don't have to do the traveling. So, you know, even though it's not a far distance to Turin, Barcelona still has to travel. They have to, you know, get out of their comfort zone. And plus, it's 4 days after playing a La Liga match. However, I'm confident that they'll be super focused for this match as opposed to the last year when they went to Juventus. I think Valgrin will have them ready to go. You know, like we said, you know, having the mixture of players with keeping them fresh, keeping everyone focused, and keeping everyone feeling important. You know, the biggest thing for the coach, especially at this level, is he wants all the players pulling on that rope together, right? And so by interchanging these squad players all the time, giving a lot of variety, every player is, as we say in Spanish, enchufado, like connected into it, you know? And so everyone's into it. So I think Valgrin will have them ready for both of these matches, especially after this international break where most of them didn't play. They'll be fresh for these two tough matches coming up.
Yeah, and I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to predict that Paulinho is going to start in the Leganés match, and then he'll be on the bench for Juventus.
Interesting. I can see him playing in the Juventus match to match the physicality that Juventus brings. I could see that happening. But I definitely, you know, like we talked about earlier, and my famous quote is, I was happy to see Paulinho start. You know, I'm perfectly confident with his ability to, if he plays in the Leganés game or Juventus, that he'll be able to provide not only physicality, but also some attacking prowess for Barca.
Yeah. And this last week was, I think, a particularly good week for me because I had a lot going on in school. So it was kind of nice to take a week off from the league and watching the games, the Champions League and all that, then, you know, club dates and all that. But I am also now very excited for Barcelona to be back in action in these two games. So I'm really looking forward to watching these two.
Me too, you know. And so since the players were on international break, you know, I got to do things like go to IKEA for 3 hours yesterday, you know, where I was standing up for such a long time, my feet started to hurt. So I'm excited for the matches to come to not have to do IKEA trips, but I digress.
But 3 hours at IKEA, I think that's about the minimum amount of time that you can spend going to IKEA. So I'd say you did pretty well.
Yeah, but see, the thing, like we were talking earlier, Madrid, IKEA's on the outside of Madrid. So it's almost like the journey to Mordor, you know, it's almost like it takes an hour to get there plus the 3 hours plus the hour back. And it's just like, man, I felt like I just ran a half marathon, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So now you get to spend 3 hours in two different sessions over the next week watching Barcelona play. So you'll just be sitting on your couch. That'll be nice.
Correct. I'll be ready for that. I'll be focused and ready to take my notes for the future podcast episodes.
Yeah, we've got to show up and do our job. All right, that's it for this week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to be a part of the show. Give us your comments, questions, topics you'd like us to discuss. Just find us at barcatalk.net to find any way that you want to get in touch with us. Thanks for listening. And also, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Spread the word about Barca Talk to your friends. And keep an eye out for us on Spotify on your phone. Until next time, I'm Brian Henderson.
I'm Gabriel Quiroga.
And this is Barca Talk. Thanks again. Visca Barça.
Visca el Barça.